I guess the Nick Saban factor just totally skews everything.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack hotline. Dan Rafael, ESPN.com, joining us now. Dan, welcome back. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you been?
I'm good. I'm good. Unfortunately, we haven't had a lot of exciting things to talk about with Jermaine Taylor, but with his win last weekend, it looks like things are heading in the right direction. His camp believes that with a dominating performance over, admittedly, an outmatched opponent, they feel like they're on track maybe to get into a high-profile fight this coming year. What are your thoughts on his career at this point?
You know, I have mixed emotions about it, to be honest with you. You know, I like Jermaine a lot. I've been covering Jermaine since his professional debut. I was at his professional debut, covered, you know, all of his world title fights, actually, including, you know, making the trip to Little Rock when he fought Uma several years ago.
Yeah.
You know, Jermaine, you know, was a really good fighter for a while. You know, certainly was a heck of an amateur, winning an Olympic medal and everything. You know, but I'm like many people. I mean, being honest, I'm concerned because of the head injury that he suffered in the fight against Arthur Abraham, and the fact that even taking that fight out of account, out of the situation, you know, the very brutal knockouts that he suffered in a couple of those other fights, Carl Froch and Kelly Pavlik. I mean, but you put in on top of that the fact that he had a brain bleed, which is the leading cause of death among boxers who get hurt in the ring. I mean, it's a very dangerous situation. Now, his, I guess, was not maybe as serious as some others because he has come back and fought. And I got a chance to talk to him and see him when I was in San Antonio this past weekend. And it was good to see him. I hadn't seen Jermaine in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he seems in good spirits and good health. I mean, he was there with his wife. And, you know, I've known his trainer, Pat Burns, for many years. Pat is, you know, is a heck of a trainer and a good man. And he's very bullish on the way Jermaine has been training and his dedication. Certainly you could see it in his weight and the way his body looked. I mean, Jermaine is, you know, a guy that was in tremendous shape for that fight. So all that's good as far as how he looked in the fight. I thought he actually looked pretty sharp. Now, I'm not going to oversell JC Candelo, his opponent, who is at one time back in the early 2000s was a you know, a fringe to top 10, lower top 10 junior middleweight contender. But one of the things that struck me, and I was talking to the guys who tracked the CompuBox punches for fights, they were sitting, you know, right by me in San Antonio, made the comment they had tracked a number of JC Candelo fights over the years. He was a guy that would average like 100 punches a round. So if you had him in a 10-round fight, he might, you know, approach 1,000 punches thrown in a fight. He was a very busy, active guy, even if he wasn't a big puncher. Against Jermaine Taylor, you know, he was averaging way less. He might have thrown, if they had gone a full 10 rounds, you know, maybe only 200 or 300 punches for the fight.
Wow.
So Jermaine was not matched tough, and nor should he be. I mean, he hadn't fought in 14 months, and we know the situation. So you can't get overexcited about how he looked against a guy that was basically there to be a complete punching bag who Jermaine just tore apart and easily beat. With that said, I did think he looked sharp. His jab was on point, it seemed, and that's always been his best weapon. And given his connections, the weight class in which he fights, you know, it would not be a surprise whatsoever if sometime in 2014 he did get an opportunity to fight, you know, for a title against a Peter Quillen, who's with the same promotional company that's been featured on Showtime, who's, you know, a good undefeated young fighter also. You know, we'll see.
Dan Rafael joining ESPN.com's boxing analyst on the Stickies Rock and Roll Chicken Shack hotline. Yeah, it's funny, Dan, because I have not paid as close attention to the weight class itself as much as Jermaine individually because of what has gone on with some of these losses. But when I look back through the list today, there are a lot of familiar names in there. And the guys that were in the mix when Jermaine was at his peak, most of those guys are still around. The 160 class is, I don't want to say old, but certainly seasoned. There aren't a lot of 20-somethings hanging around the top of that division.
Well, the top guys in the weight class are Sergio Martinez, who's, you know, in his mid-30s, who's, you know, admittedly near the end of his career. He's going to probably fight Miguel Cotto this coming summer in June in what will be a very big fight.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows how much longer Sergio is going to be around. And again, that's not a likely fight to happen for Jermaine, only from the standpoint that because if he's with Golden Boy and they're doing all their bouts on Showtime and Sergio has been tied to HBO for, you know, all of his championship career, that, you know, that is not going to happen. But if you look at some of the other fighters in there, Gennady Golovkin has a title. I think he's 30 years old. He's probably, most people consider him, although Sergio's the champion, people probably look at Golovkin as like the number one fighter in that weight class. He's just been on a tear. He's a candidate this year for Fighter of the Year. Just been wrecking guys. But again, he's with HBO too. Other fighters in that weight class, you know, it's Felix Sturm is still hanging around. Mm-hmm. You know, that was also one of the fighters in Jermaine's Olympic class. I believe they fought in the Olympics. You know, he just regained the title a couple weeks ago. He's about Jermaine's age in his mid-30s. you know, there are talented fighters in the middleweight division, and Germain, because of his name and the fact that he was undisputed champion, and he did fight a lot of big fights against people like Bernard Hopkins and Kelly Pavlik, and even when he fought up at super middleweight against the likes of Carl Froch and Abraham, you know, automatically he is one of the biggest names in the weight class. It's just, how much is the name worth compared to where you think he's at in his career in terms of his ability at this stage?
Bernard Hopkins is a wonder to all of us, and I read this weekend, and I think it was on ESPN.com, about how Germain and B-Hop had met for the first time since their fight, and certainly there was some contention there, but B-Hop has that with most everyone he's ever fought. But it sounded like it sounded like it went well, though.
I was standing right there when it happened. If you go on my Twitter feed, Dan Rafael at ESPN, or Dan Rafael ESPN, I took a picture of the two of them with their arms around each other. I mean, it was like old home week, mm-hmm. And it was great to see that. And I was shocked because we were joking around with them, and Germain actually said it was the first time he ever just like talked to Bernard, you know, just as people, as opposed to when they were opponents. So other than when they were promoting their fights together, and there was no love lost there at all, they'd never really spoken of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But Bernard, you know, who's now involved also with the promoter as one of the executives at Golden Boy, in addition to also still being an active fighter and one of the light heavyweight title holders, came over and had his arm around him and, you know, was giving him, you know, good wishes and, you know, met Germain's wife. I mean, it was really, you like to see that. Two guys that had, you know, two very significant fights against each other. A lot of water under that bridge, especially as it related to their promoter at the time, Lou DiBella. You don't have to get into all those details, but the point is to see what had took place between them, you know, I guess almost 10 years after the fact, it was a very, very nice thing to see. I actually was kind of like, this is very cool,
yeah.
Which is why I took the picture.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's where I saw it was on your Twitter feed, but I thought that was cool too. And we're going to see Germain tonight. He's performing in this karaoke event that we're putting on, so he's been a good sport about that. He's done it in the past, but I'm looking forward to talking to him about
that. I'd rather watch him fight, frankly, than hear him do karaoke.
No question. I think his wife is going to be the lead singer in their duet tonight, so that'll be fine as well. What about Hopkins? Because, I mean, you talked about how he's sort of got his foot in a couple different pools right now. But he is truly a wonder when it comes to the world of sports. And I remember talking to him before the first Germain fight about how, you know, he promised his mother and, you know, he's going to quit at 40. I mean, now the question is, does he quit at 50? I mean, he's amazing.
That, he is amazing. You know, he's spoken many times in the past several years about that promise to his mother. And, you know, he's at peace with that. And he has obviously done very well post-40 in his career. You know, he just fought in October. Title defense against Karl Marat, became the oldest fighter in boxing history to make a successful title defense. He's already broken the record twice in terms of being the oldest fighter to win a major world title, which he did originally against Jean Pascal in Montreal a couple years ago, and then did this past year, you know, during earlier this year against Tavoris Cloud in New York. He is a wonder. He's going to turn 49 in early January. So he definitely will be 49 years old when his next fight takes place, which probably will be a unification fight come probably March or April against one of the other title holders named Behboud Shumanov, who was on the card that Germain fought on last Saturday night. Behboud Shumanov defended his title in the first bout that was part of the Showtime quadruple header. So people got a chance to see Shumanov, who is a good fighter. He was an Olympian for Kazakhstan and, you know, had won a world title very quickly in his pro career until, like, maybe his 10th fight he won a title. Again, because of the promotional situations, he's really the only title holder in the light heavyweight division that is immediately available to fight Hopkins. So Bernard was in the ring when Shumanov was doing his interview after the fight, and they started to talk up the fight. Richard Schaefer from Golden Boy says that's definitely the fight they're going to make. So you can look for that fight to take place probably, like I said, March or April. If Bernard wins, he'll do another thing that no one else has ever done, the oldest fight ever to unify world titles.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, like you said, the question is, if he fights, say, like around April, and he has, you know, wins the fight, and he's now got two light heavyweight titles, you figure he probably fights one more time in the year 2014. The question is, does he fight in the early part of 2015 and be the first fighter as a title holder or ever to fight as a 50-year-old title holder? I mean, he is remarkable. I saw him. He did an appearance on Arsenio Hall's talk show on TV last night. You know, funny. You know, still well spoken. Mm-hmm. Looked nice in his suit. You know, not a guy that talks in a way where you think he took way too many punches. That's the reason he survived so long in this sport. He's taking care of his body.
Mm-hmm.
He is a workout animal, and he has not taken too many clean shots that are showing any signs of doing damage at this point. You know, he speaks and has the same quickness of his mind and wit as he had when I first met him 15 years ago.
Dan, if you would rather watch Jermaine Taylor fight than watch him sing, I assume that you would much rather watch Vitali Klitschko fight than be a politician, but that is the route that he is headed down. What do you make of that scenario, and does his brother obviously become the guy in the heavyweight division now?
Well, as far as Vitali's career choice to more pursue his political career than to continue boxing, you know, I don't have any particular problem with that. I think it's good. He's trying to help his people. He's always been, at least for the last several years, interested in doing that. And he's accomplished so much as a professional boxer that, you know, it gets to a point where, in his mind, it's like, what else is there to do? There was no big fight out there for him. He's right. Made, you know, I believe it was 9 defenses of the title before he resigned the title this week. There was nothing else to do. He's made, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars, so money is not an issue. You know, in his mind, and I think the minds of many of his supporters and fans, he has a higher calling, which is to go to do public service in his home country of Ukraine, where they got a lot of problems, and he's trying to help work them out. But as far as who's the guy in the heavyweight division, you know, even though Vitali had his title for a long time, his brother Vladimir, younger brother Vladimir, has been the recognized champion for a long time, and basically the only top guy that he hadn't fought was his brother, and for obvious reasons, they had said forever they would never fight each other because of a promise that they made to their mother.
Yeah, they kept their promise to their mother.
Absolutely, and I had never doubted for a minute that they would not fight each other. I know the relationship that they have with each other. I mean, that just wasn't ever going to happen. But as good of a career as Vitali had, it's pretty much universally agreed upon these days that Vladimir, you know, was the superior brother, or at least the deserving guy to be the man. Because remember, when Vitali had an injury back in 2005, he retired for like 3-plus years. And during that period of time, his brother really took over the division. So even though when the brother came back and regained one of the belts, his brother was now in the midst of this dominating title reign. And so even though Vitali looked good and did what he was supposed to do, you know, there was no way for him to jump ahead of the brother because they weren't going to fight each other.
Mm-hmm. Is there any hope for an American?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of guys out there that you could probably look at. I don't know how far they're going to go, but they're going to get the opportunity partially because they have good records and probably because they are American. And you're talking about primarily Deontay Wilder, who was a bronze medal winner in the 2008 Olympic Games. He is the last man to win an Olympic medal of any kind in boxing for the United States. We did well as a country in the women's side of things in London, but none of the men won anything. So he's the last medal winner for the United States in terms of the men. He's a big, big puncher, very tall, 6'7", goes about 220, 225, has unbelievable punching power in his right hand. He's 30-0 with 30 knockouts. And even with all those fights, the question marks are going around the block because he's fought absolutely the most horrible competition you could possibly think of. So he's going to get a shot. And the first time he fights a good fighter, at that point we might find out if he can fight or not or take a shot because he's 30-0 against nobody. So he's got the potential offensively, but we've never seen him tested at all, really. So the jury is totally out. There's another fighter named Brian Jennings who's 29 years old from Philadelphia, who is also undefeated. He's like 17-0 with about 9 knockouts. Got a lot of TV exposure last year, only fought one time this year. Has looked good in his fights, changed promoters and all that kind of stuff, so kind of knocked back his schedule a little bit in 2013. But he opens up his 2014 schedule on HBO on January 18th in Canada, and he's on January 25th in New York City, he's taking on another undefeated fighter named Arthur Spilka, a brawler, you know, exciting kind of fighter from Poland. So that'll be a little bit of a step up for Jennings, and, you know, maybe he can catch fire and move along. But those are probably your two best bets, is Jennings and Wilder.
Okay. Dan, we're about out of time here, unfortunately, but I would suggest everybody to follow Dan on Twitter, and it was great to have the update since the fight was not televised on the Taylor fight last week, and so we appreciate that. At Dan Rayfield, ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter. And you had a little